Hello, lovely podcast people. I hope you are well. Today's podcast, or this podcast, is going to be on creatine and the elderly. Now, I kind of mentioned I might do this podcast, and in hindsight, it mimics some of the other stuff that I've spoken about in other episodes, but I just thought it would still be nice to do it, even though it's going to be short. It's going to be the shortest one ever. Short, sharp, and shareable. That's a good one. I thought specifically because giving it this title, it obviously appeals to a very certain demographic of individuals. It can be sent to parents and grandparents or listened to for those people who want to give this information to them. And yes, we'll see if we can keep it short. Not something I'm great at. So yeah, and also, side note, if you are on a watching platform, YouTube in particular, yes, I am wearing these silly blue blocking glasses because I've only gotten around to recording this later in the day, very late at night, in fact. Well, not very late, but just end of the working day. And so I know I do look like that Gimp Dave Ass spray. If you're not aware of him, he's one of the biggest charlatans around. He's the man who invented bulletproof coffee, sticking a boatload of calories from butter fat in your coffee to somehow biohack your physiology. He's the worst. Anyway, but he bangs on about biohacking. Normally, if you see biohacking, you run a mile. But obviously, there will be little instances and things that they get right. One of which is the effect of blue light, which we get from screens, this, that, and the other, on our circadian rhythms, on the, you know, essentially hormonal release within our body relating to melatonin, if you've ever heard of it. But just it disrupts sleep, so it's why you shouldn't look at your phone and record podcasts in front of really bright lights. And it's not just blue light actually that impacts it, it's just any light. So this is horrific, but I wanted to get it done. Anyway, some off-topic stuff there for you. Again, might be specific to the elderly population. I would also just quickly say, when we talk about the elderly population, it's tricky because there's no defined term. And you know, some, again, the biohacking gimps are like, oh, you need to do this, that, and the other after the age of 30 or after the age of 40, or we lose this much muscle mass, so you must do X, Y, Z. And some of what we deem as aging actually comes simply from things like inactivity. And we can really stave off much of what we deem to be a normal part of aging just by staying physically active, for instance. So, and that's one thing I want to touch on today. So I said there'll be some crossover because I'm really going to just focus on the same areas. Creatine in the elderly populations, whatever that may be. And I'll give you some definitions. You know, this is for individuals in these studies are like 90 plus, regularly 80 plus. But, you know, 50 and above, I think you can safely say anything I talk about here is specifically relevant to you or your client or your parent or grandparent who may be that age. But I'm really just, the findings are only slightly different with regards to cognition versus healthy young volunteers in subjects in these studies. But with regards to muscle mass and performance and these other things, it's all much of a muchness. It's the same thing that we know that creatine does, and it does it well, and it does it in elderly populations. So yeah, I'm going to talk about muscle mass, you know, the effect of training on, and these are specific studies that, I mean, I'm not going through many studies, but all the studies seem to show a very similar thing. And I am going to do an episode on dosages, but it's, again, much of a muchness. It's all roughly the same amounts. Now, every study that's done is not homogenous. They do not use, their methods are not homogenous. They do not use the exact same methods, unfortunately. But what I've done and what I will do is link you to some big meta-analyses, which I think I mentioned what that was last episode or the one before. But it's just a great way that we can see, because some of these effects in individual studies are quite small. And sometimes the study doesn't have what's called enough power to show us the effect. It doesn't reach statistical significance because it doesn't have enough subjects to have enough power to show us what we're trying to look at. And so you get a difference between groups, but then it's not called statistically significant. But when we get these meta-analyses, we get lots of studies, we group them together, use all of their results, and we're able to get a better picture of what we're looking at. And so I will link you to a couple of studies on this, which just show, as I've already said, so with elderly populations, like I think one of the meta-analysis uses subjects from around 55 to 85 in all of the subjects are in that age range. And unfortunately, we don't know the exact dosage, but as I've said, they're using the similar kind of dosing protocols. I'm going to go more specifically into what dosing is and the drawbacks in some of the research, the way people just use these blanket numbers rather than what's called a relative amount. I can already feel like we're going to go on a bit longer than I hoped here. But when you have relative amounts, like relative protein intake, a protein intake that it's relative to your body weight rather than what's called an absolute amount. So people go, oh, you can only absorb 20 grams of protein. I mean, that's rubbish. Let's change that. But, you know, you only need 20 grams of protein to maximize recovery. Well, that's only true if you're of a certain body weight. But if you are 80, 90, 100 kilos, whatever, it's not going to be enough protein in one sitting to maximize your recovery. That's not the case. If you're 100 kilos, you'll need at least 30 grams, depending on the quality of that protein, for instance. Anyway, I digress. It has actually just made me think of a good point to make here. There's some equivocal data in the elderly and protein intake. So equivocal being it's not all positive and showing the same thing. So in elderly subjects, if you give them whey protein and resistance train them, we would potentially hypothesize that they would get better results than if you just resistance train them and kept their diet the same. Now, because some elderly individuals have lost muscle mass and they are very newbie, even the addition of whey protein doesn't enhance their gains because they get such amazing gains on their own with resistance training. And that is a really excellent point for me to make when I now tell you that if we resistance train elderly individuals and we resistance train another group of elderly individuals but add creatine in, they get statistically, significantly, and real world, clinically, significantly better gains in muscle mass, in strength, in their upper and lower body, and in functional measures, which we should care about. So, you know, testing on like a bench press and testing on like a leg press, they're getting stronger, which is excellent. With resistance training, they are also improving in things like, there's a special test, I'm trying to remember the name of it. I think it's called the 30-second chair sit-to-stand test, something like that. Either way, it's kind of irrelevant. Basically, standing up and sitting down 30 seconds, and this is a well-validated test in elderly individuals. And it's an important, you know, if we think pragmatically about what an elderly person needs to do, getting up and down from a chair is one of those life functions that sometimes becomes troublesome. And so we get statistically, significantly better improvements in that functional test when we supplement with creatine over just doing resistance training alone. So that's when you combine the two. Now, what's really interesting is I want to highlight one study that I will link you to. I don't know the author off the top of my head, and I've stupidly not written it down, but it doesn't matter. In this study, they essentially supplemented without any training. That's the interesting thing here for me, is it's not just a case of, well, resistance training, take creatine, things get better. Those improvements are augmented by creatine supplementation. You can simply take creatine. Now, they did a what we'll call a loading dose in this study, and they used 4 times 5 grams of creatine a day. So it's an absolute amount, which is annoying, but you know, it's a normal-ish amount. And in the second week, they used half that. And the outcome of this study is fantastic. They showed, without any training, that there was an increase in grip strength. Again, another useful marker for life function, people losing some function and ability to do normal daily tasks. And what I also want to point out is sometimes it's difficult to get someone to resistance train. Sometimes people don't have the access to these things. But if you can simply get someone slightly improving in daily life activities, making stuff easier, for anyone who's ever worked with an individual, especially if any of you personal trainers who listen to my podcast, if you can, and you know, and anyone who's had parents and grandparents who are in these situations, if you can simply get them doing more in their daily life because they feel better and they're more capable of doing so, life is the training stimulus. Sometimes it's injury or illness and bed rest that has reduces our function, and then it's more difficult to gain it back. If we can get them back on that road, that's really, really helpful. And so in this study, 20 grams for a week, 10 grams for a week, and there was an increase in grip strength, and also an increase in another thing, which is called something like, I can't remember it, it's something about fatigue threshold. So essentially they exercise them at a fatigue threshold, physical working capacity, something like that. Basically, get them to do physical activity hard at a fatiguing threshold, and it improved just through the supplementation of creatine. No resistance training, this isn't a training study. So again, I'll link you to that one. And one thing I did bother to write down before the podcast, and really that's a reason I should have written down some of these other details for you, is this, because I know there will be some questions, and there have been some questions and some worry around this. So from one of the meta-analyses, studies directly assessing kidney function with creatine in older adults have not detected adverse effects on the kidney or liver with creatine supplementation. So I know that question will get asked. Now, it's always good to consult a healthcare professional. The unfortunate landscape that we have is very often the healthcare professionals will not know, because they're not trained in the stuff, they do not know. Now, if there are other major health issues and you have a consultant for that, you know, for instance, when I talk about protein intake, okay, well, if someone's increasing their protein intake and they have kind of a pre-existing kidney disease, they will likely have a consultant who they can talk to about their intake of protein. But realistically, creatine isn't causing any major stress on the body that we need to worry about. Anyway, so I just wanted to include that one for you. So really, as I've said, I'm just repeating some of the stuff that we already know, or at least, it mimics younger individuals. The final thing is then just to talk about creatine and cognition. And again, it's just simply we are just taking creatine and testing, you know, doing a battery of tests. And we obviously get baseline data, and then we're getting the tests. And lots of these tests I don't fully understand. I've never been involved in this research. I've never read up hugely on what these tests are. But they are simply measuring various different domains of cognition. So, for instance, one of the cool findings is the fact that it improves long-term memory tasks or performance in long-term memory tasks, which is great. And various other tests of, as I said, these domains of cognition. So one of the things that I wrote down here was just a couple of these things that they tested: spatial number recall, random number generation, forwards and backwards. And they did note in one of these studies that one of these tests, in only one test, did they not see an improvement. Why didn't they? There could be different reasons. What I would say is, my personal feeling on this is that is a little bit of why not. It's not doing any damage. It's a very inexpensive supplement. It's tasteless. You know, if it tasted disgusting, that is, you know, I know what it's like to work with or have family members who are older individuals and are maybe stuck in their ways and don't want fuss, this, that, and the other. Creatine is not going to make stuff taste gross. It's not like getting someone to drink a big whey protein shake. It's relatively easy on all different fronts that you might come up against, and it has these possible benefits. Now, it's not going to be a complete game changer in all these ways, but it's just one of those things. If you want to try something, this is a worthwhile endeavor, an evidence-based endeavor. And one of the reasons, you know, as I spoke about in one of the other podcasts, it's like at times of stress, at times of sleep deprivation, times when you've been doing hard exercise, hypoxia, you know, lack of oxygen. Creatine seems to, because of these stores in the brain, and vegetarians, for whatever reason that is, that's a difficult one. The data there is funny, isn't it, in terms of creatine seem to have this greater benefit, but then a bit of an unknown as to whether they actually have lower stores or why is it having this benefit, although there does seem to be this benefit. But elderly populations may be having this reduction in creatine stores in the brain. The brain is a very energy expensive area in the brain in terms of the processes that go on there, and therefore creatine supplementation seems to help. And so whether or not, you know, someone always has a decent creatine intake through their meat in their diet, maybe it won't help as much. But remembering that we still get these benefits in meat eaters, I don't want to dissuade anyone from doing it because of that. But just sometimes we have some mixed findings in the research. That's more for you geeky people out there. But it's one of those things. Take it and know that it's highly likely to have some benefit in many ways. Okay, cool. That's everything I really wanted to say. I feel like that hasn't been too long. I hope you've enjoyed it. I will be back with a maybe slightly longer episode on sports performance and different aspects of sports performance. So a little mention on endurance performance, talking about high intensity interval training type in repeated sprints type performance, tennis, football-esque scenarios, and anything else, maybe a little bit on how it could be used around weight making sports, etc. I might mention that. And then I'm going to do a bit of a listener question, some concerns, dosages, that kind of stuff. Right, I'll leave it there. Much love as always.